I'm Tanzina Vega. It's The Takeaway, and we're glad to have you here. For many Americans, turning on the tap and being able to brush your teeth, take a shower, or even boil an egg with the water that comes out of it is pretty normal. But new research estimates that more than 1 million Americans don't have access to clean running water and plumbing.
When we think of water and sanitation problems, we think of, you know, sub-Saharan Africa or Asia or parts of Latin America. But right here in the United States, at least 1.6 million people don't have a working tap or a toilet at home.
That's George McGraw, and he's the founder and CEO of Dig Deep, a nonprofit in Los Angeles who calls the problem water poverty.
If you don't have access to regular hot and cold clean running water in your home, something like a tap or a toilet, you experience a kind of poverty that is, you know, worse than material or financial poverty. Your lack of access to water means you probably don't have access to a good job, to a steady education, to a steady life of health and happiness.
The problem is particularly severe in Native communities where, according to the National Congress of American Indians, 13% of Native households lack access to clean water. That's compared to just 1% of American households overall.
No running water whatsoever, nothing. I wish, you know, I could see water coming out of the faucet. Mm-hmm. I wish I could see the water flushing down. I don't know, someday I might.
Jan Hudson is a 66-year-old resident of Baca, New Mexico, an area with a high population of Native residents. This is a clip from her interview with Dig Deep.
And I have to go far to get water, you know. Like this morning, I went all the way down to Grants to get water and come right back.
And how long of a trip is that to Grants?
Grants is 20 miles, 40 miles round trip. 45 minutes to get my water, get a few more things, and then I come home. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I try to get really conservative and try to just use two jugs for the day. Mm-hmm. When it's time to wash my hair, you know, I have to use two jugs of water
right.
to wash my hair.
More than 2,000 miles away, a natural disaster revealed a water crisis on the island of Puerto Rico.
Maria was like an F2, F3 tornado on top of your head for 12 hours. So you can imagine the destruction. There was no water, no power for months. In my area, we were without water 5 months.
That's Arturo Medina, a doctor in the community of Monteverde. And while there was a lot of attention after Hurricane Maria centered on the island's prolonged lack of power, the need for clean water was also a serious concern.
In our case, it was 175 families. We had the pump, we had the well, we had a tank, but we did not have power. FEMA and the U.S. Corps of Engineers and the government said they were going to help us. Nobody came over. The other system we have for water was rainwater. We collected rainwater. So using this, we limped for 5 months. So that's the way we reuse water, for example. If you wash, you got a washing machine going with a small generator. The water that came out of the washing machine, you use it for your toilets.
Arturo says the reality of their situation didn't square with living in the richest country in the world.
United States of America. I can't believe it. For me, it doesn't fit in my head. No, cabe en la cabeza, which means that it doesn't go into my brain in a straight way. Rich country, people don't have water, but the most basic need, I can't, doesn't, something's not right. Water is life. Agua vida. Without water in 5 days, you're dead. So you need, first, that's just the absence of water. You could stay weeks without food, but you couldn't stay days without water.
If you don't have access to regular hot and cold clean running water in your home, something like a tap or a toilet, you experience a kind of poverty that is, you know, worse than material or financial poverty.
Water poverty isn't prioritized as an issue in the United States, and there's very little data on the problem. So I asked George McGraw how he came to that 1.6 million person figure.
Well, the estimate's really simple. It's actually built off of census data from the American Community Survey, where we ask people, you know, what their house is like. But we also know that these are really vulnerable communities, right? They're socioeconomically marginalized communities of color, a lot of tribal communities, African-American communities, rural communities. And so they're difficult to sample, which is why I say at least 1.6 million in the U.S. still don't have this. And to your bigger question around why, I mean, that's really what my organization, Dig Deep, and some of our partners are trying to figure out. Why, in the richest country in the world, would we have this core of millions of people who still don't have access to something the rest of us take completely for granted? And, you know, the short answer is it's complicated. It's race, it's poverty, it's economic development, it's marginalization. But no matter what's causing it, it doesn't need to be happening. This is a problem we can absolutely solve in our lifetimes.
And I want to be clear for our listeners that we are here on The Takeaway and beyond. We're aware of water infrastructure collapses, particularly in places like Flint, Michigan. We've talked about Newark, New Jersey here on the show. We've also looked at Baltimore. But what you're talking about goes beyond contaminated water. And it's just a question of access to water, period, right?
Yeah, this is completely different. I mean, we do have a water contamination and a water infrastructure problem in this country, $1 trillion underinvestment. And cities like Flint, what's happening in Baltimore, water pricing, these are sort of the canaries in the coal mine. But in this big national conversation that's happening about the state of our water infrastructure, we seem to be forgetting that there are people who have no access to that infrastructure at all. People who woke up this morning on a place like the Navajo Nation, for instance, which is our country's largest native reservation, and who walked out of their house with a bucket a couple miles to maybe a livestock pond or a trough and drew out a couple gallons of dirty water, and that's all they'll have to use today. And they'll use that water for cooking, cleaning, drinking, bathing right here in the United States. And their kids go to public school. In a lot of cases, these people, you know, pay taxes, you know, have full citizenship status. You know, this is a problem affecting our neighbors, people like you and I.
George, would you call this a health crisis?
Oh, absolutely. Tanzina, imagine that you couldn't use a sink or a shower this morning. And imagine that you're a younger woman and have to go to school with a bunch of kids that did. Not only are you, is your health in every way affected, your ability to ward off disease, your ability to keep your gut health healthy, your ability to take care of basic needs like menstruation. And then you head to a school and you bring some of these difficulties into a public place where they're easy to pass off to other children, to other peers. These communities often deal with things like waterborne illnesses that are rarely seen in the U.S. In some counties in West Virginia that we've been looking at, rates of waterborne disease are higher than they are in developing countries like Haiti.
So tell us a little bit about Dig Deep and what it is that you're trying to do now.
So we're working on places like I mentioned, the Navajo Nation, on community-based infrastructure in places that water lines or sanitation lines won't work. We help organize communities into solutions like trucking programs that maybe pick up water at a well and deliver it to your house and pump it into a tank underground where we can use solar energy to bring it into your sink or your shower or your toilet. And at the same time, you know, we're trying to wrap our head around what this problem really looks like across the United States, because the census data is just fragmentary and inconclusive. It doesn't tell us where these communities are, what kinds of problems they're facing related to water and sanitation. So we're engaged in a few big research efforts with major foundations and institutions like Michigan State University and the U.S. Water Alliance to really reanalyze that national data to show us what this problem actually looks like. And then we're embedding researchers in six communities across the country that are experiencing these water and sanitation issues to figure out what's really going on the ground.
Tell us about your six communities. Where are they and why did you pick them?
Well, you know, this problem is experienced across the country in every one of the 50 states. But we picked six hotspots. These are the places that are sort of emblematic or representative of other parts of the country where people are experiencing the same thing. So the six hotspots are the California Central Valley, the Four Corners region of the Southwest, primarily tribal areas, the U.S.-Mexico border colonias or irregular communities, primarily in Texas, some rural counties of the Deep South in states like Mississippi and Alabama that are predominantly Black, and then some rural counties of Appalachia, Kentucky, West Virginia, and finally San Juan and some of the surrounding areas in Puerto Rico. And in each of these places, there are Americans who don't have access to running water or a working toilet. And we're trying to figure out why, how they're experiencing that, and how we can end that problem.
Have you guys found anything yet? Is there any research that you can share with us so far, even if it's preliminary?
Oh, absolutely. We found some really interesting things. There are really strong correlations between race and a lack of access to basic plumbing. And that probably doesn't come as a surprise to most people in 2019 in the United States. But the numbers show that if you're African American, but especially if you're Native American, you are less likely, markedly less likely, to have a working tap or a toilet in your home. The data is also showing us how these communities can kind of hide. So, for instance, in Coconino County in Arizona, 3% of homes don't have a working tap or toilet. That's at the county level. And that's usually where we look at this kind of data. But we've been recoding that data so we can look deeper at a census tract level, which is like a zip code. And if you zoom in, you find zip codes in there that are predominantly Native American, where 41% of homes don't have a working tap or a toilet. And this, you know, sort of goes to show that these communities, usually of color, usually marginalized in other ways, like socioeconomically, are hiding inside groups of people that are larger and more homogenous, and those numbers are harder to find.
George, do we have a right to water in this country? I mean, do we? It just feels like this is so basic in terms of our survival. To know that there are Americans who don't have access to running water, who don't have working toilets, who are using outhouses, it just boggles the mind. What do we have a right to water?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I'm a human rights practitioner myself. I have a firm belief that every human being has a right to the things they need to live a full life in dignity. And absolutely, water and sanitation is one of those basic things. When it comes to rights in the United States, of course, we mostly talk about civil and legal rights. In some states, for instance, here in California, where I'm based, we have a constitutionally enshrined human right to water. It doesn't have very strong legal teeth, but certainly the concept is there. And there are people like us over at Dig Deep and in other organizations working to strengthen those rights and give people more access to them. But it's interesting because as a global community, we, you know, passed the Universal Declaration of Human Rights coming out of World War II and enshrined all of these rights to life and livelihood, and we didn't include water. I think primarily because so many of us just took it for granted. So there's been a big push in the international community since 2010 to understand the human right to water better, to protect people's access to it. In fact, in the 25-year period ending in 2015, every country in the world sort of has been working on water and sanitation access, and we've provided access to improved drinking water for 2.6 billion people and to improve sanitation for 2.1 billion people. And while almost every country, even the poorest of the poor, are making progress around the world, it seems like somehow here in the U.S. we're slipping backwards.
How is that possible? Don't we have some of the smartest people in the world working on these issues internationally?
Sure. I mean, I spend a lot of my time trying to convince friends and colleagues that are working on eradicating this problem in countries like Swaziland or South Sudan to come back and work at home. But, you know, so many of the institutions set up to solve systemic poverty issues, or at least address them abroad, aren't really navel-gazing. They're not internally focused. And that goes from, you know, the institutions that are funding them to the people working in them. The focus for so long has been, you know, we have so much, how can we help others? And now we're really discovering, I think recently more than ever, the limitations of our own development here at home and how far behind we've fallen in things like infrastructural investment, education, even the state of our current political dialogue.
How come we haven't had a more severe or more intense public policy response to this so far? Or has there been? And we're just not aware of it.
No, there hasn't been. And, you know, I'm sort of the poster child for that because at the beginning of my career, when I started to get into water and sanitation, I immediately packed up and went over to Africa and started working too. I had no idea this was a problem in my own country. And I think that's for two reasons. One, water infrastructure in general is sort of out of sight, out of mind, right? It's not like an airport or a bridge. It's not something you see every day. We've been trained by cheap, abundant water as Americans to take it completely for granted. Most people wouldn't know where to get water if their tap stopped working tomorrow. I think that's one problem. The other problem is that the communities this affects are truly marginalized. These are the most vulnerable populations in our country, and they're not attracting the national attention that they need to. So, you know, tragedies like Flint, while terrifying, and while their effects on human lives are, you know, lamentable and we need to avoid them at all costs, have served a really important purpose, which is to wake people up to the fact that you just can't rely on these things in the United States anymore. And we need, you know, as citizens, as Americans, to pay more attention to these issues and to take matters into our own hands and do something about it.
George McGraw is the founder and executive director of Dig Deep in Los Angeles. George, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tanzina.
Hey, we need your help. You are a big part of this show, how we think about things and how we choose what to cover. Got an idea or a guest we should talk to? Get with us on our Facebook page or call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. This is your takeaway.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.